Welcome to another episode of the Wednesday Conversation. I'm Dusty White, and I'm here with Pastor Bob Thune of Cormdale Church and Pastor Chris Hemmelman of First City Church. On Wednesdays, we sit down to talk about how the gospel of Jesus Christ connects to the questions and issues of everyday life. And today we're talking about survival in an age of extinction.
We're going to talk about a Ross Douthat article that appeared a few months ago that I've been sitting on thinking about for a couple months. First of all, welcome back, Chris.
Hey, it's good to be back. When's the last time I was on here? I feel like it's been so long.
I don't know. It's been a while.
Oh, man. Between lots of things, it feels like it's been forever.
I also missed a recording or two.
Yeah. Speaking of survival.
Oh, survival in an age of bikes.
Yeah.
Mountain biking.
I was not mountain biking. I was road biking, but I was in a pretty severe cycling accident a few weeks ago. Broke a lot of bones, had a major concussion, was in the hospital for 3 days, a couple surgeries to put my body back together. So looking at a few medical bills stacking up and a few weeks of recovery or months of recovery as the case may be. Dusty got a call from my daughter saying, hey, yeah. My dad just called and he doesn't know where he is. Can you go find him? So thanks, yeah. Dusty, for
We were able to track your location. And the ambulance beat me, though, because of road construction.
There is a good Samaritan somewhere in Omaha, Nebraska, who is unknown to me. But apparently, so I don't remember the crash from what my wife and daughter were driving. They're on a road trip. I apparently called them, but at this point, I was either in shock or so concussed that I don't remember calling them. But as apparently at some point when I was on the phone with him, somebody rode up on the trail and helped me out, you know, called 911, got me to an ambulance. I don't know who that person is. So, hey, maybe they're listening to this podcast and I would just say, thank you for being a good Samaritan.
They were also not there when I got there.
Yeah. I mean, that's weird. Was, like, they were an angelic being.
Your stuff was in the ambulance and that was the last thing. Fire truck leaves, ambulance leaves, cops leave. And I'm literally, I was like a kid.
Like, guys, wait.
I was like a kid chasing an ice cream truck. I was like, wait, I'm like waving my arms. They don't care. You know, I'm either a crazy person or going to delay
this. This guy needs a hospital is what they were thinking.
Yeah. How did your bike come out? Was it
the bike is so fine. So unscathed. Seriously, it has a little scuff on the handlebar tape. That's about it.
Oh, wow.
I was frustrated. I was like, my bike is pretty expensive. It's not as expensive as my hospital bills are going to be. I would have thrown that bike off a cliff if I could have avoided this damage to my body. So, but by the Lord's grace, I'm here. We believe in the sovereignty of God. So God has purposes in it all, you know. Mm-hmm. It hasn't been a super fun few weeks, but our church has been wonderful and folks have been praying for me and I'm glad to be on the mend.
Yeah. And to be fair, you're doing pretty well today. You're looking pretty good, considering.
The post-concussion effects are ongoing. So you guys can, if I start to meander on this podcast or start to say things that sound really off base, just feel free to take over.
That's comforting.
Yeah. Wow. Okay.
Like, that's like every week, Bob.
Yeah. I was going to say.
What else is new?
But it actually might be interesting hearing you kind of say things out of the ordinary.
We also have some snacks. Guys, right before my bicycle crash, I went to England to do some ministry. And our friend, Quincy, sent me back with some shortbread squares and said, hey, I want these to be a snack on the Wednesday conversation. Quincy Martin doesn't really want to be... She was like, I don't really want you to mention me. But you just got mentioned, Quincy, because you're so kind to provide us with shortbread, real Scottish shortbread. This is what's funny is that, she lives in England, but she's like, actually, these are made in Scotland, so they're technically not even English. They're Scottish, but it's okay. It's our...
Very British.
It's our national treasure.
Flag on the cover.
Yeah, we have a full-on Union Jack right here on the tin.
They're tasty. The great thing about British, Scottish treats from the UK, if you will, is they are not overly sweet.
Yeah, they don't dwell on the refined sugar.
No.
Quite as much as the Americans do. Well, let's dive into this topic. Ross Douthat, as you know, is one of the most thoughtful writers. He's a Christian, Catholic, works for the New York Times, is really insightful on cultural stuff. And so I try to stay abreast of things that he writes. And this is a piece he wrote basically about AI. And it was, you know, sometimes what Douthat writes is sort of cultural analysis, but sometimes he verges more into, here's what I think is coming, and here's what I think it's going to require from us. And I thought this was an interesting piece because the thesis he's going to offer to us, and the reason I think it's important for the listeners of this podcast, is he's essentially making the case that if we are going to pass on the faith, pass on values, pass on culture, pass on important practices, it's going to require a high degree of intentionality, perhaps more than ever, in an age of digital distraction. Now, as I say that, that probably doesn't sound super surprising to you. You're probably like, well, yeah, that makes sense. But he's making an argument in this article that Christians especially, and really anyone who cares about the flourishing of humanity, needs to take an active role in intentionally passing on culture and practices, because if ever that could sort of be assumed in the background, it can't be assumed right now. So I want to start by reading the paragraph at the very end of this article. Then I'll go back and read a little bit of his argument so that listeners can kind of follow along, and then I'll just invite you guys to weigh in on your thoughts here. So here's how the article ends. This is the last paragraph. Have the child. Practice the religion. Found the school. Support the local theater, the museum, the opera, or concert hall, even if you can see it all on YouTube. Pick up the paintbrush, the ball, the instrument. Learn the language, even if there's an app for it. Learn to drive, even if you think Waymo or Tesla will drive for you. Put up headstones, don't just burn your dead. Sit with the child, open the book, and read. All survival will depend on heeding once again the ancient admonition. I have set before you life and death, blessing and curse. Therefore, choose life, that you and your offspring may live. I love a New York Times article that ends with a quote from the book of Deuteronomy. Yeah. So that's part of why I like this article. But let me now read for you. I'm just going to summarize the sort of some key pieces of the article so that you listeners can understand why Douthat is making this admonition to us that we need to be very, very intentional and strategic about things like learning instruments, learning languages, learning how to drive, passing on values to our kids, and so forth. The article begins, by the way, this is from April 19th, 2025, in the New York Times. The article begins this way. Every great technological change has a destructive shadow. But the age of digital revolution, the time of the internet and the smartphone and the incipient era of artificial intelligence, is forcing the human race into what evolutionary biologists call a bottleneck, a period of rapid pressure that threatens cultures, customs, and peoples with extinction. So he's going to use this idea of bottleneck as a repeated theme throughout the article. And of course, he's using it the way evolutionary biologists use it, where when they look at the fossil record, there's certain moments in history where they sort of identify a bottleneck, where there's, you know, major climate changes or, you know, dramatic things that happen, maybe a meteor strike or things like that, that just cause a rapid response in human systems or in living systems. So he's using that as kind of his metaphor for what's happening. He's saying there's a mass extinction event happening, and it's going to create this bottleneck moment for the human race. Here's how he explains why he thinks that. When Hollywood struggles to compete with YouTube and TikTok, that's the bottleneck putting the squeeze on traditional artistic forms like novels and movies. When daily newspapers and mainline Protestant dominations and Elks Lodges fade into irrelevance, when sit-down restaurants and shopping malls and colleges begin to trace the same descending arc, that's the bottleneck tightening around the old forms of suburban middle-class existence. When young people don't date or marry or start families, that's the bottleneck coming for the most basic human institutions of all. And when, because people don't pair off and reproduce, nations age and diminish and die away. When depopulation sweeps East Asia and Latin America and Europe, as it will, that's the last squeeze, the tightest part of the bottleneck, the literal die-off. This isn't just a normal churn where travel agencies go out of business or Netflix replaces the VCR. Everything that we take for granted is entering into the bottleneck. And for anything that you care about, from your nation to your worldview to your favorite art form to your family, the key challenge of the 21st century is making sure that it's still there on the other side. I'm going to pause there for a minute because I think that's an interesting thesis. That's the case he's making. He's saying for whatever you care about, the key challenge of the 21st century is making sure that it's still there on the other side. Now, guys, I'm not sure that any of us is going to live beyond the 21st century. We're all going to die during the 21st century, probably. But what essentially he's saying is, if you're a listener to this podcast, your vision for your life needs to be making sure that the things you care about make it to the other side of the 21st century because of how disruptive he thinks the technological revolution is going to continue to be, especially in an age of AI. So that's the thesis. Now, he's going to explain why he thinks or how he sees this sort of digital revolution being so disruptive. He's going to get to that in a minute. But first, he's going to build his case a little further. He says, the challenge is made more complex by the fact that much of this extinction will seem voluntary. In a normal evolutionary bottleneck, the goal is surviving some immediate physical threat, a plague or a famine, an earthquake or a flood or a meteor strike. The bottleneck of the digital age is different. The new era is killing us softly by drawing people out of the real and into the virtual, distracting us from the activities that sustain ordinary life. In this environment, survival will depend on intentionality and intensity. Any aspect of human culture that people assume gets transmitted automatically without too much conscious deliberation is what online slang calls NGMI. Not going to make it. Languages will disappear. Churches will perish. Political ideas will evanesce. Art forms will vanish. The capacity to read and write and figure mathematically will wither. And the reproduction of the species will fail, except among people who are deliberate and self-conscious and a little bit fanatical about ensuring that the things they love are carried forward. I want to pause for a minute and just say, you guys convinced so far? I mean, he's making pretty dramatic statements. They're like, hey, unless you're committed to this, it's not going to go forward. What do you think so far about his thesis?
He does sound alarmist. Okay. And I can already have my own low grade fever of anxiety. Okay. So I have to usually read stuff like this and, you know, Rod Dreher and those kinds of guys with a little bit of filter. But I think he's probably right about the digital age being a different type of, you know, reality, which is something that we're in right now. And that we're, yeah, when he says it's killing us softly, we're kind of unaware.
Yeah.
You know, we're just drinking the Kool-Aid. When they're talking about depending on our intentionality and intensity, I'm always like, I'm here for it. You know, like sign me up, but I don't want to become too intense, but I am with him on the deliberation and the self-conscious piece. I think we are going to have, I think Christians in general just right now have to be deliberate about life in general.
Well, here's what I think is interesting. That last phrase, people who are deliberate and self-conscious and a little bit fanatical about ensuring that the things they love are carried forward. I actually think that's a great statement of historic Christianity.
Yeah.
I mean, Christianity exists because it's made up of people who are deliberate, self-conscious, and a little bit fanatical about ensuring that the kingdom of God progresses on the earth. I mean, that's kind of the Great Commission kind of creates that. Mm-hmm. So I think what's interesting is the thing he's appealing to is a disposition or a demeanor that I think most gospel-minded Christians already have. They're like, man, the gospel matters, and I want to be deliberate and self-conscious about carrying it forward to the next generation.
Yeah, several thoughts. One, Dusty, similar to you, when I first read this article, he's a brilliant writer and thinker. And so a lot, it's like, this is compelling. And I like some of the other stuff, some of the things that we'll get to too, as far as the nuances where he teases out about the kind of killing us softly. Something I always wrestle with articles like this, and especially as one who has read a lot of dystopian literature, is that while all of those novels and all those kind of predictions, there's elements of truth, it never is as bad as they say it's going to be. Like we haven't achieved full 1984, at least, you know, there's been pockets where that's happened, but, or things similar, but, you know, or in Brave New World. And I think one of the reasons is because human nature is just an interesting thing. Like there is something about us just as humans that no matter how bad we can kind of get off kilter and even, you know, using technology, that just human nature has a way of bouncing back and kind of just, I think there's something to that that keeps us from going as far. And I think it's the grace of God as well, but I think the way God has made us as humans. And so there's a part of me that's skeptical. I don't want to completely say he's off base, but there's a part of me that's skeptical that it will ever get quite as bad, because I think at some point, I mean, even look at the pushback against AI and some of the technology, especially coming from Silicon Valley, like that there's a part of just human nature that just rebounds because we realize this is not it. This is not the way to live. So I think that's a thought that I had in my mind. The other thing is this thought of being intentional. That is, you know, Bob, you pointed out like Christians have had to learn to live this way and other groups have had to learn to live this way. But you think about just how many of us just sort of go through life just on autopilot to some degree, or don't really think about preservation or think about, you know, passing down culture or preserving culture. So that's a unique idea. Can people at a this large of a level live with that level of intentionality?
Let me go on, keep reading. And because he, in this next paragraph, he sort of mentions what both you guys said. While this description may sound like pessimism, it's intended as an exhortation, a call to recognize what's happening and resist it, to fight for a future where human things and human beings survive and flourish. It's an appeal for intentionality against drift, for purpose against passivity. So he's saying, hey, I know this sounds pessimistic, but actually what I'm trying to do is just call people to resist this, to be intentional and to be purposeful in making sure that human things and human beings survive and flourish. And I think what Douthat is getting at is that, to your point that you just said, Chris, there's a lot of this is just implicit in the world around us. The drift is happening without our intentional knowledge. Mm-hmm. He's going to explain why. So the next section of the article is called The Fatal Progression. Here's what he's going to explain what's happening. First, he says it starts with substitution. The digital age takes embodied things and offers virtual substitutes. For romance, dating apps supplant bars and workplaces and churches. For friendship, texting and DMing replaces hanging out. For entertainment, the small screen replaces movie going and live performance. For shopping and selling, the online store supplants the mall. Some of these substitutes have meaningful upsides, but in many cases, the virtual substitutes are clearly inferior compared to what they're replacing. But this substitution nonetheless succeeds and deepens because of the power of distraction. Even when the new forms are inferior to the old ones, they are more addictive, more immediate, easier to access. Swipe-based online dating is less likely to find you a spouse, but it's still much easier than flirting or otherwise putting yourself forward in physical reality. Video games might not offer the same kind of bodily experience as sports in real life, but the adrenaline spike is always on offer, and there are fewer limits on how late and how long you can play. So, even though people ultimately get less out of the virtual substitutes, they still tend to come back to them and eventually depend on them. Thus, under digital conditions, social life attenuates, romance declines, institutions lose support, the fine arts fade, and the basic skills and habits that our civilization took for granted, how to have an extended conversation, how to approach a woman or man with romantic interest, how to sit undistracted with a movie or a book, are transmitted only weakly to the next generation. All of this describes our trajectory before artificial intelligence entered the picture. And every force I've just described is likely to become more intense the more AI remakes our lives. Now he asked the question, okay, so if that's sort of the trend, if that's the drift, if that's how things sort of go, if that's the progression, what's going to happen? He says, look, unless the true AI doomsayers are correct, in the year 2100, there will still be nations, families, religions, children, marriages, and great books. But how much survives will depend on our own deliberate choices. Mm-hmm. And that's the interesting thing. So he's basically saying the passive approach, the sort of frictionless approach, is to just sort of default to the virtual world. And what actually survives is going to depend on our intentionality. I think this is interesting just with regard to like shopping. My wife and daughter give me a hard time because I always tell them like, don't buy stuff on Amazon. They're like, yeah, but it's so easy. Like you just click a button and it's here the next day. And you know, like there's some things, it's just like the convenience factor of it is awesome. But I keep reminding them, yeah, but like we actually want stores to exist in our city. Like we want business people in our city to thrive. And you know, it's more friction to drive down the street to the, you know, to the natural health food store and get whatever you need than ordering on Amazon. But there's an intentionality factor there. Like one is very easy and passive and one takes intentionality. And you understand how, yeah, man, for all of us, the default setting is just the easier, more passive approach.
I think that part of the article is the heft for me that gets the most attention because of how he's talking about how it affects relationships and human interaction. Like older people always talk about like when you guys were growing up, you know, Chris, we were just trying to keep you from having sex and being with girls, you know? And now that's not the problem. The problem is we can't get kids
to
get out of the basement because they're on their phone or on video games. Right. So like the drift has happened and the thing we need to figure out how to preserve and be deliberate about has shifted for sure. And so I think he's right about how it has this relational human to human effect that the church is like, we are stewarded here with like, we have to figure out how to do that with some great intentionality.
Yeah. I don't want to get caught up on the kind of the philosophical big picture of like how accurate would this play out and what it exactly look like. Cause I think his basic premise is true. I think it's right in the sense of we will lose things if we're not intentional. If not outright, we'll at least lose the quality and the quantity of the things that really make culture beautiful and life beautiful and human. So I think that's the beautiful part of this article is he's onto something significant. So the thing that, again, I think I come back to is the intentionality required and how often do people live that way normally? Like what is going to be the move culturally, the move, the formation piece that's going to have to, it's going to require people to come to this conclusion. You can no longer drift. You can no longer take things for granted. There has to be a level of intentionality that a lot of people just don't live with for the sake of the bigger good. Like it's because of prior cultural capital, a lot of people were able to drift and be led along by a small pocket of people who are intentional. Now it's just, we're going to have to widen the level of people who are intentional. And can that happen is a question I'm asking.
Well, I think we're going to have to get intentional too about even just basic discipleship when everything is digital. Like when the Bible is a book.
Yeah.
Right. And so like, I can't watch it.
Yeah.
I can listen to it, but I'm going to have to.
You've not seen The Chosen?
But I'm going to have to like engage that for the next generation. Like with literacy,
yeah, that's a great example.
Discipline and time, and it's going to take a minute.
That's a great example. So if you think about how did literacy grow in the world, how did civilization become literate? The answer is usually Christians pushed that because the Bible, they want to be able to read the Bible. That's a great example of a baseline cultural, what would you call it, a practice or a competence that we kind of like in our grandparents' day was sort of taken for granted. Right. Well, of course, everybody needs to know how to read. But in an increasingly digital world where it's like, well, you can get by without great reading skills, Christians are going to have to once again be the people who are deliberate and intentional about saying, nope, we're going to teach our kids to read. We're going to teach people in our church to read. We're going to care about literacy and literature because the Bible is a written book. That's a good example. And he gives a bunch of examples like that in the article. You know, he talks about, hey, families are going to survive only because people have a clear affection and preference for their own kin and not just for like global humanity, right? Like there is a priority there. Arts are going to survive. The arts are going to survive only by elitism, only by people just caring about like, this has to be good. We're not going to put up with AI slop, you know? So it's interesting that there is a kind of intentionality and deliberateness about passing on various practices or preserving various cultural forms that I think Christians are well suited to take the lead on. And what I want us to hear in this Douthat article is the call to us to say, hey, we're going to have to be more intentional than ever when it comes to discipleship, but also when it comes to just loving our neighbor by caring about great art, supporting the arts, supporting literacy, making sure we're educating the next generation and so forth.
While I think he's right about the digital age shifting and we need to shift with it and be more intentional, in some sense, it's more of the same. Like one area for that is the dinner table, right? Mm-hmm. Like my kids think everybody eats dinner together because that's the intentional decision we've made.
Yeah.
But most people are just sliding calories down their throat, right? But we have decided, no, we're going to the dinner table most of the time is a big deal.
Yeah.
Well, that's just a norm in our family, but it's not a norm in most families.
Right.
So that can be because we believe in the embodiment of that and that there's a lot caught around the dinner table that's more than food. But those are the kinds of small things that Christians are going to have to be a little bit more deliberate about. So in some sense, it's just more of the same. It's just those tactics are going to change and the things we're intentional about are going to change. Yeah.
What do you think about, so this point he makes about, hey, the real is better, but people will be satisfied because of just the access or just the formation piece of like, they'll just settle for the less real. That's interesting to me too, because I've been saying this for years that one of the places that Christians have an incredible opportunity to speak into is speaking about, hey, what it means to be human and how being made in the image of God and the fullness of our humanity and the beauty of that and how Christ redeems and restores and brings nobility to that. And let's live that way. Let's model that. Like the church can be a culture or a community where people learn how to be human. But as he points out, people can acknowledge that the real is better and still go over here and choose the less real. That's an interesting challenge that we face too, I think,
to continue to
pull people to the real.
I think that's why he's writing the article, because he wants to make us aware of the fact that we all have that sort of default. I think of it in terms of the friction involved, Chris. There's just less. So use the example of dating, right? I think this is in Jonathan Grant's book, Divine Sex. He quotes this conversation he had with some guy who was like using online dating apps. And he had met this girl and dated her for like a year and then decided this isn't going to work. And the quote from the guy was, if I had met her in real life, I probably would have tried to make it work out. But because I met her online and I just realized like behind her, there's 100 more people waiting in line. He's just like, it just sort of taught me like, well, unless this is perfect, unless it meets every criteria I could possibly have for a spouse, maybe it's not the one. And I think that's so the frictionless reality of just like, well, meeting somebody online is just easier than asking someone out at church or, you know, putting myself out there in a more direct way. Shopping online is just easier than getting in the car and going down the street. I think that frictionless capacity. So I guess what I'm trying to tap into there, Chris, is that to do something in a more embodied, concrete, tangible way always does create actually more friction. It requires more effort and more purposefulness. And there's a way that I think our flesh just defaults to like, well, let me just do whatever's easy. You know, like the reason I'd rather stream your live stream of your church service than come to church is because I can do it in my jammies, you know, like, I mean, there's a little, you know, it's, there's something in us that does default to the thing that seems easier. And I think what Douthat is saying is, you know, if we think about why did we call my grandfather's generation the greatest generation? Well, because they went through World War II and the Great Depression and they learned how to do hard stuff, you know, and realize that like we got to make sacrifices if we care about the future. Our generations, the younger generations in America haven't had to do that.
Yeah.
And we're just a little more, we default toward comfort a little bit more easily. And I think he's writing to sort of put that on the radar and say, hey, if we're going to actually pass things on, it's going to require choices that sort of are against our own self-interest in certain ways. Yeah. They're more friction, not less. They're more effort, not less.
Yeah. And as people have noted, I mean, this is the dark side of affluence. Like we have lived in so much comfort and so much wealth and so much advancement that it's, I mean, and this is, you know, books like Brave New World and other dystopian literature, they said that ultimately it's not going to be, you know, the fear-driven boot on our on our necks that's going to get us. It's actually going to be, we're going to willingly give up all of these things because of the comfort and less friction. So I'm thinking just pastorally, hey, what are the things that I want to speak into? Kind of the you hit this domino and it knocks down a lot of them. And there's is this not giving provision for the flesh, meaning not taking the path of least resistance. And that where are those places in your life that where it's like, hey, the frictionless, I'm just doing that and I'm following that default rather than no. Things that are worth, the things that are most worth doing are the hardest things. The things that the cost.
I think it was the Harris brothers that wrote that book like 20 years ago, right?
Do hard things.
That's a good title. I don't know what the book is about, but like that title kind of captures, do things that are difficult.
Yeah. I mean, they were calling young people to take on challenges. And I think one of them became, he like clerked for one of the Supreme Court justices and went to Harvard Law School. So, I mean, they practiced what they preached.
Yeah. I think that to put a point on this and bring it sort of to focus for our listeners, I want Christians to hear the call here of intentionality, purposefulness, and deliberateness in our decision and choices to pass on values, practices to one another and to the next generation. I mean, the title of this article, you know, Ross Douthat is not an alarmist kind of writer. The title of this article is An Age of Extinction is Coming. Here's How to Survive. So I want you to hear that at least his read on things is that especially with the growth of AI, we're facing an era where important human things are going to die off unless we commit to preserve them. The church is one of those important human things. The scriptures, literacy, right? Some of the things that you've already mentioned, Dusty, just like things that basic Christianity carries along with it. The capacity to read, the capacity to meditate on truth that we gather through our ears and through our eyes. These things are going to become less and less common and less culturally valued. And so the church is going to need to be the place where we hold on to the value of those things and where we pass them on. And I think this, when I read the article, I was like, well, it's provocative to say that an age of extinction is coming. I mean, if that's true, that's a big deal. But more interesting to me was that, you know, the way he ends it with all those calls to action, have the child, practice the religion, found the school, support the local theater. He's just saying, hey, do the human things.
Yeah.
Like, let's recommit to being people who are invested in real human effort and work and beauty and thriving. We're going to have to be more intentional about that than ever. And I want people to hear that call. And I love how he ends it with that that quote from the book of Deuteronomy. I've set before you life and death, blessing and curse. Therefore, choose life. And I think what Douthat means by ending it that way is to say there are choices we're going to have to make to advance human civilization and human flourishing that in the past maybe it wouldn't have required such a deliberate choice.
They would have just been a given.
Yeah. Yeah.
The goal of this podcast is to equip our own church for discipleship and mission. So if you're a Christian or a church leader in another context, thanks for listening in. We pray that this conversation might be helpful to you as you minister in your context. And we always love to hear from listeners. So if you have thoughts, questions, future podcast topics, send us an email, podcast@cdomaha.com. Thanks for listening. We'll see you next time for another episode of the Wednesday Conversation.